We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead.
Bam, baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana.
Flips it down.
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Pacer Nation, we are one day closer to Pacers Bucks tipping off Sunday, but welcome back to another episode here of your go-to Pacers podcast. That's right, you are listening to Setting the Pace, a Pacers podcast. I'm your host, Alex Golden. I'm joined today by Michael J. Fauci. Fauci, how's it going, brother?
One day closer, just like you said. Playoff basketball, I need it like I need air. It just feels like this is a place that you don't realize how much you miss it until it's this close, and it couldn't come any closer.
We are recording this Tuesday night at 8 p.m., and the Indiana Pacers had their first playoff practice today, had a lot of different conversations from the media, but Fauci and I are here to do our official, or our official, not official, official, Pacers-Bucks breakdown, preview, whatever you want to call it. We've got 11 topics to cover in this thing. It is lengthy, it is detailed, but we're going to get you guys ready for this series. I know there's going to be a lot of content out there, a lot of people talking about the Pacers, talking about the Bucks, all the different scenarios out there. But Fauci, we want to start things out talking about our Pacers and the Big Three and how they've done against the Bucks this season. And it's a really interesting wrinkle because Pascal Siakam did not play a game with the Pacers against the Bucks, but he did have some experience against the Bucks this year in a Toronto jersey. So curious how he's looked, Haliburton, Turner, those three guys.
You know, it's really hard to win in the playoffs without a big three. And our big three, in no order, Pascal Siakam, Tyrese Haliburton, Miles Turner, we're going to break it down for you. So we'll start with Siakam. He only got to play the Bucks twice this year while he was a member of the Raptors. In those two games, he averaged 18.5 points per game on 59% shooting, 50% from three, 6.5 rebounds per game, 6 assists per game. You gotta like that. In one game, he was dominant. He was a plus 22. The other one, the Bucks handily took care of the Raptors. So wasn't a great performance, but he brought it himself. So I think Siakam, that's a guy that we really have as we have our eyes on Siakam because he's gonna be part of a key matchup. Giannis' status, we'll get to that later on. But moving next in our big three, Tyrese Haliburton. In the five games that he got against Milwaukee, his hometown Bucks, we'll call him, 27 points per game on 53% shooting, 45% from three. You got to love those percentages. And, of course, that scoring average. But 11 assists per game. Love that. Vintage Haliburton. And 5.8 rebounds. So, I feel like Haliburton really brought his A game against the Bucks in those five games. Lastly, that brings us over to Miles Turner. And I think that this is one of the most convincing stat lines, or most encouraging, I'd say. Turner in the five games averaged 19.4 points per game on 57% shooting, 36% from three, 7.2 rebounds, and two blocks per game. Turner was very effective against Milwaukee, and that makes me feel that the Pacers could have a big three.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. I think Tyrese Haliburton was a different player back then. This is before the injury, right? And it felt like the first team All-NBA Tyrese Haliburton that was getting a lot of love, you know, the MVP buzz that he was getting was a real thing. Like, people were chanting MVP.
They were.
Inside of Gainbridge Fieldhouse at one point this year for Tyrese Haliburton when he was playing at that level. Now, I will say this. I do respect Indiana fans for not continuing those chants as the season went on because they knew he wasn't playing at an MVP level. But when he was in that conversation, they were giving him the love and the flowers he deserved. But Tyrese Haliburton was out of his mind against the Bucks. I think it's a really good series or a good matchup for him. I think Miles Turner took advantage of some of the Bucks' weaknesses on defense and different things they were doing. And then Pascal Siakam, you know, those two games that he had, like that one, like shooting 50% from three is pretty impressive. So
yeah.
I think that it was probably one of those on the scouting report, hey, let him shoot. He's not a three-point threat. Maybe he made him pay for it. Maybe that'll be something that the Bucks do in this playoff series. So clearly three guys averaging close to 20 points or greater for all three of them. So pretty solid stats there from the Pacers big three. Any thoughts other than just what I just said?
No, I would just say, hey, look, you know, Siakam's the guy with a little bit less of a sample size, but I think that he is the added wrinkle in this situation. Hey, how is he going to play against the Bucks? Well, he played pretty good earlier in the year. I'm excited about that, but also knowing that this was a matchup that Turner had been able to take advantage of. I mean, you look at Turner, those numbers that I just went through, those are above his regular season averages. So you got to feel great about that, and especially Turner being as confident as he is coming off of that Hawks game, going into the playoffs, that's the Miles Turner that you want. And then for Haliburton, you know, like we talked about, the last couple of months, has it been vintage Haliburton? I don't know if there's any team that Haliburton played better against when you factor in four or more games.
Absolutely, Fach. Well, let's move on to the Bucks' big three against the Pacers. And we know that Giannis Antetokounmpo did have his way with Indiana this year. He averaged 42.2 points per game, 13 rebounds, 5.4 assists in five games. And I went ahead and did a game-by-game breakdown just to kind of break it down a little bit. So I'll go through those quickly. In game one, 54 points, 12 rebounds, 3 assists, 8 turnovers on 76% shooting, 16 of 18 from the free throw line, 36 minutes played. In game two, 37 points. This was the in-season tournament game in Las Vegas, by the way. 37 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 blocks, 1 turnover, 68.4% shooting, 11 of 13 from the free throw line, played 41 minutes.
Real quick. I know you mentioned one turnover, and man, was it a costly one. When Mathurin stripped him of that turnover, that was like the difference in the game. So it's just interesting that that was his only turnover.
Okay, well, let's I like that. Let's keep it going. Game three, this was the game ball gate, whatever. Infamous. 64 points for Giannis. 14 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 steals, 1 block, 4 turnovers, 71.4% shooting. But listen to this. 24 of 32 from the free throw line in 37 minutes. Just a crazy, crazy number. Okay. So then you go and you look back at the beginning of the year in January when the Pacers decided to build the wall. I get these numbers are still great. 30 points, 18 rebounds, and 11 assists. A triple-double with 2 blocks, 1 steal, and 4 turnovers. But 30 points is the least amount of points he had scored at this point, and he had just scored 64 on you. So I think you live with that. 55% shooting compared to 68 or higher, only 8 of 11 from the free throw line in 37 minutes. So he got worse, and then it gets even better. 26 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 steals, 1 block, 3 turnovers, 61.5% shooting on 9 of 13 free throws in 36 minutes. So his scoring went down each and every game. really after the big 64-point blow up that he had and trying to blow things up. So obviously Giannis is going to be a problem if he's healthy, Focci. We know that. We'll talk more about his health later on in this podcast, but I think that Giannis clearly had his way, but all these five games, like we mentioned, no Pascal Siakam. So it does play a big factor. And the Pacers were pretty small when they were trying to defend him. Right. But when they went big with Jalen Smith at the four, that's when you saw the numbers go down a little bit. And maybe that could be a little foreshadowing for what's to come. Now, I do want to move over here now to Damian Lillard, Focci, who only played four games against the Pacers, did not play in that first game in November. He averaged 20.3 points per game, 5.8 assists, and 5 rebounds a game. You know, really, if you look at his numbers across the board, nothing really stuck out in terms of great numbers. The best scoring game he had was 24, and that was in the in-season tournament game, 24-7-7. He was 7-20 from the field shooting-wise, though, so yeah. Not good shooting numbers. He was really bad at half, remember that? Then he got going there in the third quarter,
yeah.
And that was pretty much it. You go to game two when Giannis had the big game. He had 21-6-4. It was very quiet because Giannis was so good. He only shot 25% from three in 36 minutes. In game three, the first game in Indianapolis here in January, 13 points, 5 assists, 7 rebounds, 3 of 16 shooting, 18.8% in that game, and then 1 of 9 from 3 in 38 minutes. And then the last game they played, 23 points, 5 assists, 2 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 turnovers, but only 6 of 18 shooting and 2 of 8 from 3. So, you know, 25% again from 3 in 36 minutes. So he did not shoot the ball well. He did have decent scoring numbers, but nothing really sticks out to you saying like, oh, Dame time. It was just whatever.
Honestly, overall for the series and those four games that he played, he shot 32%.
Yeah.
That is disgusting. And this is for a guy that, you know, is a really, really good player. But he struggled against the Pacers, and I would like to see what he averaged against other teams, because I would like to imagine this was some of his worst showings. So
yeah.
Very curious to see, you know, how the Pacers defend him this time. You could imagine it's only up from here. Dame is too good to be averaging just 20 points per game on 32% shooting. So I think things will change. But Alex, tell him what Chris Middleton did, because he is someone that you said could be an X factor for the Bucks.
Yeah, he could be an X factor, and he only played 20 minutes in the first game, where he had 19 points, 2 rebounds, 4 assists. He was 7 of 13 from the field. So pretty good shooting there, 53.8% from the field. In game 2, Focci, that he played in all 5 games, by the way. 20 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, and 4 turnovers, 7 of 13 shooting, 4 of 5 from 3 in 30 minutes. Game 3, 14 points. Not a good showing from him point-wise, but that was the Giannis big game, so he didn't have to do as much. 14 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, 1 steal, 6 of 11 shooting, still really good efficiency. Game 4 was one of his better games. He had 21 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists, 1 steal, 9 of 13 shooting, so 69% from the field. And then game 5, 19, 6 and 7 with 2 blocks, 4 turnovers, 7 of 13 shooting and 4 of 7 from 3, so 57% from 3. For the series, 18.6 points, 5.4 rebounds, 5.6 assists. You know what? It's pretty good numbers for a number 3 option on your team. And I thought he shot the ball efficient, and I think they're going to probably go to him a little bit more than they had. I should have looked up his numbers for the season to kind of compare them, but it felt like that was very Chris Middleton-esque. You know, very, very average numbers, 18, 5.5, 5.5, like, or 18.5, 5.5, 5.5. Just a really solid player that his numbers don't stand out. You know, they're not like, oh my God, what a great player if you're looking at stats. But I think if you watch him play, you can feel like, okay, he's a smooth criminal.
So I do have his stats in front of us. So he averaged 15.1 points per game, 4.7 rebounds, 5.3 assists, shot 49% from the field. So you could see he was actually better against the Pacers. I think that Middleton is one of those players that, you know, on any given night, he could give the Bucks 20 points per game. He's not the same, you know, all-star level Chris Middleton that he was before his, you know, some of the knee injuries that he suffered, but still a very good player that is, has always been, you know, a really good shooter for his career. He's a 39% three-point shooter. So at any point, look out, but, you know, I think he's going to be someone that probably takes his game to the next level in this series.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason why he had such success against Indiana is because they had so many small guys on him.
Yeah.
With Nesmith guarding him now, could that maybe muck things up a little bit? Does that make it more difficult? Still, I think he's bigger than Nesmith overall with his build. I think he's around 6'8", if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, Nesmith will have his hands full, being about 2 or 3 inches shorter than him. But I think that that also plays a factor because at times you had Buddy Hield out there on him, you had Bruce Brown on him, and those guys, you know, especially Bruce, could like play decent defense, but he's just so short you can shoot right over him. So I think that having more size in the starting lineup is going to make that more challenging for him.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that the Pacers are better suited for the Bucks this time around, and that's what gets you even more excited because it's not that we didn't have success. We had a lot of success against Milwaukee, yet we feel like we're in a better spot. Hey, that's as good as it gets. But Moving to the next category, we're talking about what about the rest of the starters? We talked about the big three on both sides. So the projected starting fives for both these teams. Look, for Indiana, it's going to look like it's been. We're talking about Tyrese Haliburton, Andrew Nembhard, Aaron Nesmith, Pascal Siakam, and Miles Turner. Nothing's changing there. For the Bucks, they did make some changes recently, and it sounds like they will be making some changes moving forward. At point guard, you got Damian Lillard. Patrick Beverley has recently moved into the starting lineup. You got Chris Middleton. From everything that we've heard about Giannis' status, it doesn't seem that he will be ready for game one. Something could change. So you imagine Bobby Portis fills in for Giannis if he is unavailable for that game one. And then at center, Brook Lopez.
Yeah, I think that that's pretty standard for your projected starting five. The only one that could be a bit of a wrinkle is, does Pat Bev start? Does Pat Bev stay in the starting lineup? Do they go to Pat Connaughton? Do they go to Malik Beasley? What does Doc Rivers decide to do? Right now, we penciled in Patrick Beverley just because he has been there, and I think defensively, they're going to need him next to Damian Lillard, and I think if you look at the matchups, which we have next here, Fauci, in terms of looking at these head-to-head matchups, to me, it makes a lot of sense for Tyrese Haliburton and Patrick Beverley to be paired with one another on both sides of the basketball. I think that it's a safe place for Haliburton to be hid defensively because Pat Bev can score in bunches. You can't leave him open for three, that kind of stuff, but it feels like a very, you know, type. It feels like the right type of player for Haliburton to guard. And then I think with Nembhard and Lillard, those two guarding each other makes a lot of sense because Nembhard's probably the least of the Pacers, you know, threats offensively. So you probably hide Lillard on Nembhard a little bit. But I think Nembhard is going to draw that matchup defensively with trying to handle Damian Lillard. So makes sense there. And then just going down the line, we talked about Aaron Nesmith, Chris Middleton. That feels pretty standard. And then Siakam on either Giannis or Portis, and then Miles on Brook Lopez. Now, I talked about it on the last mailbag, or maybe it was two mailbags ago. But, you know, I did say just to keep an eye on if the Bucks decide to switch that Portis-Lopez thing defensively, do they put Pascal – or do they put Brook Lopez on Pascal Siakam and Bobby Portis on Miles Turner – just to kind of throw things off there a little bit, disrupt the Pacers pick and pop that they have there with Tyrese and Miles. But I think that there's going to be some interesting ways because we saw Indiana just abuse Milwaukee's pick and roll coverage all season long. Now they probably are going to change that, knowing how bad Indiana obliterated that and how much space Tyrese Haliburton had to get shots off.
I mean, there was times it looked like Haliburton had Brook Lopez on skates, you know, doing switches, and it just, I loved every second of it. Yeah, I do think they will make some changes, but I think you were right in terms of the matchups that you discussed. And one of the things that we were wondering about is, like, what's an advantage? What's going to have a bigger impact, age and experience or youth and hunger? I think this is a great question because it could go either way. In my opinion, normally I think age and experience has the edge. You can't make up for experience. It's the one thing that you got to be able to go through. This Bucks team is loaded with experience. I mean, Giannis has a finals MVP and a ring. A lot of these players, I would say just about everybody, for the most, I would say every player has been to the playoffs before. So that's something that the Pacers can't say. But then also you look on the other side for the Pacers, they're going to be playing carefree. They're going to be looking to run. And we know Giannis is not healthy. We don't know how many games he's going to miss. You take him out, that is a major advantage for Indiana. And I think that that's something that puts that pressure on Milwaukee to say, how are you going to make up 42 points per game against this Pacers team? So I think that I give the edge to the Pacers in this series. Experience goes a long way. But without Giannis, all of a sudden the edge moves to Indiana.
And I think part of the problem too here, Fauci, is that the Bucks just don't have any youth really on this team. Nope. A lot of old guys. And I don't know how good this team will hold up, especially if Giannis is not healthy. Where the Pacers, yes, they are more filled with youth and hunger type of guys with Haliburton, Nesmith, Obi Toppin, Andrew Nembhard, those kind of players. They still do have some veterans that have played in the playoffs, won a championship at Pascal Siakam, right? Mm-hmm. Miles Turner has been in the playoffs before. TJ McConnell's been in the playoffs before. So Doug McDermott has been in the playoffs. So, you know, they do have guys that have experience, but they also have guys that are young and hungry. So I think it's actually a mixture of both, where when I'm looking at this Bucks team, I'm trying to think, who are the young guys that are really going to crack the rotation? I mean, are we looking at Andre Jackson Jr. being that guy?
Marjon, you know, Beauchamp, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
Beauchamp. You know, like, I mean, are these guys going to have that significant of an impact? Probably
I
not.
Do not think so.
Yeah, so I think that the hunger, you know, sometimes when you've done it so many times, like, it can get a little exhausting. And there's been some stuff, you know, kind of rumbling out there, like, what's going to happen with this Bucks team if they do lose in the first round? We'll talk about that later, but I just think for the Pacers, like you said, kind of a carefree mind when they come into this game. Lots to prove. They haven't proven anything yet. Where the Bucks really are trying to prove to everybody that, you know, the Pacers aren't this young and up-and-coming team that's going to take them down. It's more so they're the team that, you know, they're there to win a championship. So it is a totally different dynamic when you're looking at both squads and what their goals are and what is considered a good season versus not a good season. So I just think that, you know, it does feel like the youth and the hunger of the Pacers is going to be enough to get over the agent experience, especially if Giannis isn't fully himself. And I know we have to keep throwing that out there, but when you're talking about a top three player, top five player in the league, potentially missing time and not being himself fully, it does play a huge factor into how this series plays out.
It really does. And look, and there could be so many different scenarios. I mean, if it's 1-1 and Giannis missed both those games and he comes back, all of a sudden, look, Milwaukee, I think, has an edge, but we'll have to see what happens. We got to play that out one day at a time. But for the next category that we're thinking, Alex, you want to lead us in on this one?
Well, I think you did the research on the benches, right? So
right.
I will let you get us started here on this one.
And I think this was a great section because we know the bench was the Pacers' strength this year. They had the best bench unit in the NBA, led the NBA in scoring. I believe it was like 45.6 points or right around there. So great to see. But here's how it worked in those five games. So in game one, the Pacers scored 32 points off the bench. The bench shot 41%, 35% from three. Look, you're not, that's not great. It had 8 rebounds, 4 assists. Buddy Hield led them with 11 points. We know Buddy won't be out there for the Pacers. Andrew Nembhard had 10. So not the best performance for the bench, below their average. For the Bucks, they had 29 points off the bench. They shot 53%, 3 of 8 from 3, 18 boards, 9 assists. Bobby Portis had 11 points and 8 boards. So Bobby Portis really their best bench player on a nightly basis, especially against the Pacers. So Pacers still outscored them off the bench. Hey, it was a win.
Yeah, game two. That's the game that McConnell did not play in, by the way.
Exactly, yes. So McConnell did not suit up in that game. That's when he was really in and out of the rotation. But game two, this is where the Pacers not only picked up a win, but the bench shined. They had 43 points. They did it on 49% shooting, just 1 of 6 from three, but it's all right. 14 boards, 8 assists. Isaiah Jackson led the Pacers bench scoring with 11 points and 6 boards. It was a balanced bench effort for the Bucks. Just 13 points, 13 boards, 3 assists. Honestly, nobody shined. So Pacers bench outscored the Bucks by 30 points in that game two win. Now, moving over to game three. This is where Giannis went off for 64 points. The Pacers had 61 points off the bench, a ton. They did it on 45% shooting, just 30% from three, 13 boards, 11 assists. 11 turnovers off the bench. It was rough. Completely negates all the assists they had. But Mathurin led the bench with 14 points. Aaron Nesmith, when he was coming off the bench, had 12. For the Bucks in that game three, they had 28 points on 52% shooting, 7 boards, 8 assists. Bobby Portis led them with 19 points. You could remember he had that crowd rocking. Bobby Portis was a big part of why the Bucks won that game three. And moving over to game four. Another time where the Pacers' bench shined. You ready for this one? 70 points off the bench for Indiana. They did it on 50% shooting, and that factored in Buddy being 0 for 6 from the field. So it showed just how dominant the Pacers' bench was. They just 2 of 13 from 3, a little gross, but 32 rebounds off the bench,
yep.
12 assists. Mathurin, vintage. This was like textbook great Mathurin. 25 points, 13 boards. Isaiah Jackson was a plus 29 in the game. He had 18 points, 9 boards. TJ McConnell was a plus 31 in the game. He had 16 points and 9 assists, and Obi Toppin had 11 points. He was a plus 35. The bench unit was a major difference in this game. The Bucks bench unit, 16 points on just 31% shooting, 9 boards, 4 assists. Bobby Portis led them again with 8 points and 5 rebounds. Takes us into our last game. Another Pacers win, 59 points from the bench on 48% shooting, 6 of 14 from 3, 19 rebounds, 13 assists. Mathurin had 16 points to lead the bench unit. Obi had 15, Buddy had 10, Isaiah Jackson had 9, and for the Bucks, just 38 points off the bench, which I guess, you know, that's good, just it fails in comparison to the Pacers outscoring them by 21. They had 15 boards, 8 assists. Marjon Beauchamp had 12 points in that game. So basically the kind of theme is that the Pacers bench was huge in this series. Benedict Mathurin was one of the best bench players for the Pacers that they will not have, and Buddy Hield was one of the better Pacer bench players that they will not have as well.
Yeah, totally different dynamic, and I think one thing to bring up too that's really important is for a majority of these games, either Jalen Smith was not healthy or he was a starter. So Isaiah Jackson came off the bench, and Isaiah Jackson did pretty good in that series, and I remember him and Bobby Portis got into it a few different times. So I wouldn't be surprised if Isaiah Jackson gets a little bit more of a chance here with that second unit, especially early on if Jalen's not playing to the level that he needs to play at. So I think that that's one thing to keep an eye on, because Obi Toppin had kind of gone back to the bench at this point, the last two games at least. So you had Obi off the bench, you had McConnell off the bench, and you would have had Isaiah Jackson off the bench. So three of your five guys that would have been out there with that bench unit would have been there playing. So they had success against Milwaukee. Clearly, if you listen to the numbers, like, it was just a bloodbath there by the Pacers on the bench, outscoring them. And I think one thing too, while you were talking, I just kept thinking, okay, Bobby Portis is their leading scorer for all these points. If Bobby Portis is starting,
they're going to
not get really much out of their bench at all. Nope.
They're going to be in trouble, because I really do think that when the Pacers, when you have to have, you know, Bobby Portis come out or Brook Lopez, like, what's going to happen? Where is the scoring going to come from? And I think the Bucks have a big problem in that situation, because the Pacers' depth has really been a major strength all season long. Even when you factor in that Benedict Mathurin and Buddy Hield will not be out there for the Pacers, you still feel good about this Pacers bench. And I think that that is going to do this team wonders in the playoffs when everybody's still shortening up that rotation and they need a little bit of a break. Pacers really aren't skipping a beat.
Absolutely, Pacho. Are you ready to move on to our next
topic?
Let's do it. So this is miscellaneous stats that I wanted to bring up, because I wanted to kind of get a head-to-head comparison of what these teams look like in this five-game series. I know the Pacers won 4-1, but it's actually a little bit closer than you realize. You know, in this series, we had some really close games. There was a blowout here and there, but I'm just telling you, you're going to want to listen to these numbers. So for the offensive rating for the Pacers, it was 122.0. For the Bucks, it was 118.3. Flip those around for defensive ratings, and that gives the Pacers a positive 3.6 net rating and the Bucks a negative 3.6 net rating. So points per game for the Pacers in this series together as a team was 128.8 points per game. They shot 48.2% from the field, and listen to this, just 30.5% from three in those five games. The fact that they went 4-1 in those games where they shot 30.5% on average is pretty impressive. 29.8 free throw attempts for the Pacers, which I thought was interesting.
That is.
They had 46.4 total rebounds, 12.2 offensively, 34.2 defensively, 28.8 assists a game, Facci.
Amazing.
The Pacers. 11.8 turnovers in these games, 7.2 steals, 6 blocks a game. They committed 25.8 fouls per game, but they were able to draw 22.2 in the game. So, you know, that might be free. I think it's fouls, but it might be free throws. I don't know. That's just what the stats are from NBA.com. And then going to the Bucks, you know, I said the Pacers averaged 128.8 points per game. The Bucks were 125.2 points per game. 49% from the field, the Bucks shot, 31.7% from three. So they shot better from three than Indiana. And they averaged 32 free throw attempts to the Pacers, 29.8. They're rebounding. They were not as good offensively rebounding the basketball. They only had 9.4 offensive rebounds compared to the Pacers 12.2. So Indiana was getting three more offensive rebounds per game. The defensive rebounds were the exact same. I thought it was very interesting. 43.6 total rebounds for the Bucks in the series. 25 assists, though, per game for the Bucks against the Pacers. So they did a good job passing the ball and getting some good looks there. 13.2 turnovers a game, 5.4 steals, 6.8 blocks, and the fouls were 22.2 and 25.8 drawn. So that is the same thing there, just flipped. Now, let's get into the fast break points, Vache. This is where I thought it was really interesting. In game one, the Pacers won the fast break points 14-12. In game two, Indiana won 11-7. In game three, Milwaukee won 27-19. In game four, Indiana won 16-8. And in game five, Indiana won 21-17. Every team that won the fast break points, they won the game. Now, points in the paint scoring, it was very close, but there were some lopsided games here. In game one, the Bucks dominated Indiana in the paint, 60-40. In game two, Indiana got dug back into that hole a little bit. They outscored the Bucks 72-60 in the paint. But then Milwaukee, they outscored Indiana 70-56 in game three. But Indiana, in the last two games, they dominated Milwaukee in the paint. They outscored them 64-50 and then 64-60 in the final game. So I thought those were pretty interesting things to look at, since you already just talked about the bench points, bringing up points in the paint, fast break points. Those are always, you know, big things people look at. And I felt like the Pacers, you know, the fast break points weren't as gaudy as you might think they would be based on how much they ran. But that also goes into effect that the Bucks were the second fastest team in the league at that point, too.
Yeah, I think people look at, you know, the Pacers style and they forget that, yeah, the Bucks was an explosive offense, especially in the beginning of the year. I think it is interesting when you mention it, how game three fast break points, when the Bucks won that category, hey, they won that game. They outscored the Pacers, you know, by 8 points from a fast break standpoint. That's a difference in the game. But also, obviously, Giannis just dominated in the paint, going to the free throw line in that game. I mean, he was a menace that the Pacers had no answer for. So I think these were some really good stats. I'm very interested to see how the Bucks are going to be able to make up some of these big numbers, you know, without their franchise player. But, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But actually, I thought another thing that you went on, touched on next, was really interesting, and that's life with Doc Rivers and this Bucks team.
Let's go ahead and take a quick break and talk about Unified Healing. You know, whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or simpler, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Indiana or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/pace, P-A-C-E. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system. Now, let's get back to the show.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, so this is the category that I also did as well, Flatchy. So sorry to take up too much time talking here, but
we're good.
We're going to talk about the post Adrian Griffin, you know, Doc Rivers era, like what things have looked like. So the Bucks are 17-19 since Doc took over. They were 32-14 with Adrian Griffin. Okay, so what areas did they improve? Well, I think the first one is the locker room lost trust in Griffin. And that doesn't show on a stat sheet. So that's really big. And a lot of it had to do with their struggles against the Pacers, their inability to make adjustments and kind of figure things out. Like the Indiana Pacers frustrated them so much that going 1-4 against them caused them to really kind of lead that firing of Adrian Griffin. But I do think that Rivers did a good job cleaning up their transition defense. And really, that had been a big problem for the Bucks at the beginning of the year. Now, looking at their numbers, it's pretty interesting because they were second, Fonji, in offensive rating with Adrian Griffin. They were 19th in defense.
It's a big, okay. Yeah.
And they were 9th in net rating. So they were 120.4 in offensive rating, just behind the Pacers, who were number one at this point. 116.4 in defensive rating, which is below middle of the pack. And then 4.0 in net rating, which was 9th in the NBA. And that was in 46 games. Now you get a 36-game sample size with Doc Rivers, 113.9 offensive rating. So basically lost 7 points, shaved 7 points off their offensive rating.
A lot in the NBA.
That drops to 19th in the NBA. So they go from second the first 46 games to 19th the last 36. They improve from 19th in defense to 15th in defense, which that's a small step, not a big step. And then in net rating, they drop all the way down to 17th, 0.6 in net rating with Doc Rivers. So they definitely took a step back. So, you know, the Bucks were third in pace, Fauci, under Adrian Griffin. Now, with Doc Rivers, they're 16th in pace. They've changed their style completely. Their identity has completely flipped the last 36 games, and their record reflects that as not being successful. I mean, it's just... it is what it is at this point. I know Giannis missed some games, but it's just not been as successful as it had been. So, yes, the Bucks were a worse team based on record with Doc Rivers. You know, they had more of an offensive-minded identity with Griffin. With Rivers, I would say they're more so middle of the pack. They're a team that it's not like they have that lead dog out there mentality like they did with the offense. They at least had an identity offensively. You know, with Milwaukee now, you thought maybe they'd get more defensive-minded with Doc Rivers. But even then, like, their team's just not good enough to be that good defensively. So while they've sacrificed some offense to get a little bit better defensively, they're still not playing at the same level offensively that they need to really feel like a team that you're going to fear every single night like you normally would when you see Giannis and Dame on the other side of the court.
Fear the deer is no more, because we don't. I think that when you said middle of the pack, that describes him. I mean, we were talking about being like 19th in certain categories and 16th and 17th. That's below average by most standards. In the NBA, you know, look, that's not going to cut it. What is their identity? Right now, I just think they don't have one. And I think that, yeah, they slowed it down. Okay, that did help a little bit defensively, but you completely lost what was making you a special team in the beginning of the year. They panicked. I really do think the Pacers – that series kind of did break them a bit. I know you mentioned, hey, the locker room lost trust for Adrian Griffin. I do believe that that is a real thing at times where you do have to make a change. But I think that they made that change way too early. And I think that right now they can't afford to make another head coaching change. So all interesting stuff. I mean, 17-19 since Doc took over. That is not what you expect for a team with a guy that has been, a multiple time, Giannis is as good as it gets in this league, and you have a lot of talent around him. So no excuse for 17-19. I think that when you mentioned where do they improve, their improvements were not much. I think they took a massive step back. And for that, I'm excited to see, hey, if the Pacers handled them before, what could you do against a slower paced, Bucks team? I think that's only going to help the Pacers defensively.
I totally agree. I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic. We wonder like what the team thinks about them. Obviously, stats are stats, but have they grown that much since Doc's been there? Doesn't seem like it. I think that they have more of a defensive-minded mentality still. I mean, adding Patrick Beverley to the mix, I think that's always going to kind of you know, bring that level of intensity up defensively, just putting him in a lineup compared to a Beauchamp or whoever else was out there, Malik Beasley, guys like that. I think Doc has a, you know, has done a good job in the first round of playoff series too. So we have to give him that knock as like that credit as well. But it's one of those things where I think you're right. If I'm the Bucks owner and I already fired Budenholzer for Adrian Griffin, who Giannis handpicked, I don't think I'd fire him 46 games into the season. I think I'd probably ride it out for the year and then make that change in the offseason when it's a little bit more of a smoother transition. Firing a coach middle of the season doesn't usually work out well for anybody. Nah. And I wish we would have looked this up because I'm just now thinking about it. But how many coaches have you seen really get fired in the middle of a season and then help lead that team to a deep playoff run? I would say that it's probably not very likely. So that means there's a lot of turmoil with these teams. Is there something you're, is there a team you're thinking of?
Yeah. The one guy I could say who did it, Ty Lue. Ty Lue got hired and they won a championship in Cleveland. But that's LeBron James, Kyrie Irving,
that same
and a
year?
Very good team. Yeah, it was.
How early was it into the season when they fired Blatt? Do you remember?
I think it was actually like right around the All-Star break.
Was it really? Okay.
Yeah, well. Yeah. Because I remember David Blatt was supposed to coach the Cavs in the All-Star. He was supposed to coach the East.
Same thing that
in
happened.
All-Star game. He got fired. And it was just like, it was the craziest thing. And Ty Lue ends up, yeah, they go on that run. But they also made a ton of trades at that deadline. They shook that whole team up. But anyway.
This team has not.
this Bucks team added Patrick Beverley. That's about it. So one of the other things that I found that was very interesting is, hey, the head coaches in this matchup, it's going to be key. Rick Carlisle versus Doc Rivers. What has it been in the past? And I got to say, when looking up Rick Carlisle's playoff record, I was a little bit sad to see that he's 63-70. I think everybody always remembers that championship ring, but ever since then, it definitely has been tough. I think that he had his struggles with the Mavs and really being able to get out of the first round. But more specifically, Rick versus Doc. You know, two coaches that feel they only need to be known by one name. And then how does it work over the last 10 years? Look, these coaches have been in the league for a long time. So, you know, I'm sorry I couldn't scroll back forever, but over the last 10 years, Rick Carlisle is 9-23 against Doc Rivers. That is not where you want to be. But then when you break it down, more specifically, the playoffs. These coaches have faced off twice in the playoffs, almost about 20 years in between. But the last time they faced off, Rick Carlisle and the Dallas Mavericks lost to the Los Angeles Clippers in round one. 4-2 in the 2019-2020 season. And then we're going all the way back to the 2002-2003 season. It was Rick Carlisle and the Detroit Pistons that beat the Orlando Magic in a 7-game series, 4-3. The next year, Rick would join the Indiana Pacers as the head coach.
Pretty interesting stuff there. You know, Rick Carlisle had some pretty rough teams in Dallas that made the playoffs but could never get out of the first round. And I know that was kind of like how many years did he go in a row? I mean, is he still on a first round losing streak?
He is, yeah. So he has not made it out of the first round since that championship run.
Yeah, so you're talking 13 years now. He's not been able to get out of the first round, so that's going to always weigh heavy on at least 4 losses, and you might have got 1 win, 2 wins, 3 wins, but still you're getting more losses than wins. So that definitely does kind of tip the scale a little bit there for that overall playoff record. But, you know, I think that Doc Rivers and Rick Carlisle have both shown their hand in terms of things they could do better, things they could do worse. And I know you have some pros and cons here for both of them. So before I take any of those, I want you to go ahead and share what you have for your pros
sure
and cons.
Sure thing. Look, these are both top-notch coaches. They are. Both coaches have a championship ring and a ton of experience. That's obviously a pro, but more specifically for a guy like Rick Carlisle, offensive guru. Carlisle has had some teams that, you know, even before we came over to the Pacers, the Dallas Mavericks at one point were labeled as one of the highest offensive ratings of all time. Now you look at what he just did with the Indiana Pacers. They just had the best offense that the NBA has seen since like 1984 or 1985 season in many different categories, whether it was points, whether it was assists, whether it's, you know, there were so many different categories that the NBA has not seen in our lifetime. And actually, when you look at it, about 40 years. So I think that says a lot. Another pro is Rick gives his players freedom to execute their own plays. I think that that is something that for a guy like Tyrese Haliburton, it's nice to be able to let Haliburton be Haliburton. But also, I got to say, one of the cons is that Rick's not really calling many plays at all. And I think at times you wish that he might call a timeout, especially towards the end of the game, and be like, hey, you know what? Let's set something up. He's very commonly this year let his players play, and the Pacers have not hit a lot of game winners as a result. I think there's been times you wish they took a timeout. For Doc Rivers as a pro, you know, he has a history of being a good defensive-minded coach. I mean, when you think of, you know, he made some changes with his Bucks, obviously the Celtics for a while. You know, you could say that hey, maybe it was some of the players on the team, but some of those Celtics teams were really good defensively, and he's been able to, you know, have teams that have those championship expectations. But one of the cons is his struggles to make those in-game adjustments. That has always been the knock on Doc Rivers, and also constantly having teams that blow leads and go out in the playoffs before they're ready. He has blown numerous 3-1 leads as a coach, which is very uncommon.
Yeah, I will say from like what I remember of watching both of these two coaches, you know, not up close, but just from a distance here being a Pacers person, you know, when Rick was with Dallas, it always felt like his teams were overachieving teams that underachieved in the playoffs. But they would get to the playoffs and they wouldn't be able to get over the hump. And there were some times where you had some good Dallas teams that had Dirk and things like that, but there were some teams that were stumbling their way into the 7-8 seeds, and they would get beat in the first round by a much more superior team. So I understand that. I would say with Doc Rivers, it feels like more than not, he is the favorite going into the series and does not win. So that to me is where he is just not really lived up to expectations in terms of what he's wanted. People respect him. I think that he has a great relationship with most of the guys in his locker room, but I think it more so recently, it feels like this new era of players, that welcome wears out a little bit quicker than normal. And that's why you kind of see the quick trigger on like where he's going and where he's staying and things like that. Like he's a hot commodity once he's on the market, but then once you get him there, most people are like, why do we do this? What was the point of this? So I think that they're both really respected coaches. I'm not going to sit here and say that either of them are bad coaches. I think they've definitely proven that they can win in this league by both winning titles in 2008 and in 2011. But, you know, Rick Carlisle to me is a better teacher. He is more offensive-minded, like you said. The way that he designs plays, it's just like, you know, Doc Rivers was a really good offensive player, too, when he played in the league. Like, he put up some points. Like, he knows what it takes to score and stuff like that. Like, he's not dumb. And I love the story he's talked about how he came in and completely changed his entire offense with one of his teams. I think it was in Boston because he just hated the way that it was looking in training camp. And they're like, we can't do that. It's way too late into the training camp. He's like, we have to. We don't have a choice. Like, if we don't, things are going to get really messed up. It might have been when he was with Orlando. But I think that, you know, we're not used to seeing Doc make a lot of adjustments. And that is always the one he talks about. And that was probably 15, 20 years ago, his best adjustment. And I think he's still holding on to that adjustment, Focci, and still not making any more as the series go on. I mean, we saw Philadelphia take Boston, you know, down to the wire last year in the playoffs, and had things gone a little bit differently here and there, maybe the Sixers could have upset Boston, but it's just one of those things where Doc Rivers in the second round has never been really able to get out of it. So I think that both coaches, both have their flaws. I know Pacer fans are very upset with with Rick Carlisle on a night-to-night basis with some of the decisions he makes. But I think if you were to sit there and watch Doc Rivers coach your Pacers team or Rick Carlisle coach your Pacers team, you would probably want Rick Carlisle to be your coach.
No doubt about it. I think that when you look at someone who could actually develop young talent, it's Rick Carlisle. Like, I know that some of the knock on Carlisle, hey, he doesn't play rookies and stuff like that. Look, he's rebuilt this Pacers team in 2 years. Doc Rivers doesn't do any type of rebuilds. He takes established teams that are trying to win it all, and he still falls short. So I think that give me Rick Carlisle in this series. I think that we've seen the best of Doc Rivers before, but the best of Doc Rivers has come with 3 Hall of Famers on a roster. That's kind of hard to come by. So you look at this Bucks team. Yes, Giannis is a Hall of Famer. Damian Lillard, I'm sure, will be there one day. But I just think that right now he's got some pressure on him, and he's got to come through. And I just don't know if he will.
All right, Focci, let's move on to our next point here, and we are going to be talking about X factors. Do you want to go first? Or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first. So in terms of, you know, my X factor for Indiana, I said it the other night, I'm just going to stick with it. I'm going with Aaron Nesmith. Look, I think you can go in a few different directions, and I think that's a great part of this Pacers team. But in my opinion, when we already talked about the big three, it's like, who could be that fourth guy? That's really where you have that question. And I think that you know what Aaron Nesmith's going to give you defensively, but if he can give you what you saw offensively in the beginning of the year, give you multiple games where he's scoring 15 or more, it makes the Pacers that much more of a dangerous team. So, you know, that's my X factor for Indiana. Before, you know, you go, I'll just give you my X factor for the Bucks. I think it's Bobby Portis. Look, we've talked about before, he can get that crowd going. The crowd loves him. He's just a chippy player that, you know, I already discussed was one of their, you know, he was their best bench player that now could be a starter. I think that if Bobby Portis really has it going, that makes the Bucks, that gives him an advantage. Obviously, if Giannis is out there and Bobby has it going, That's a problem for Indiana. But this is someone that, hey, he's coming off Team USA. He played with Tyrese Haliburton. I'm sure he's going to be someone that has a couple tricks up his sleeve. So I'm going Nesmith as the X factor for the Pacers, Bobby Portis for the Bucks.
Okay, so I'm going to stick with the Pacers here because I did mention Andrew Nembhard on the Mailbag podcast, said he was my X factor, and I explained why, because I just feel like defensively, him slowing down Dame could be huge for the Pacers and what they – want to do offensively and what they're trying to do defensively too, because if they can shut down Dame or just slow him down a little bit, it's only going to make it more and more difficult for the Bucks to score. To me, they don't have a ton of scoring options. They do have guys that can put the ball in the basket with Middleton, Portis, and Lopez outside of Giannis, obviously. But I just feel like so much is going to run through Dame. And if Nembhard can make life hell for him, that's going to be somebody that we really need to keep an eye on. And I know both of you, you know, both you and I like Obi Toppin, and we both like Aaron Nesmith, but you obviously said he was your X factor. But if I'm throwing out there like a second X factor kind of guy, I think it's going to be Miles Turner. I really do believe that Miles Turner needs to prove that he can be the number three in the big three. That's going to be huge for him, because I don't want to see a scenario where Brook Lopez is putting up similar numbers or outplaying Miles Turner in this series. Miles Turner has to be better than Brook Lopez.
No doubt.
Down in this series. And to be frank, he has to be better than Bobby Portis. He cannot allow Bobby Portis to have more of an impact than him. And Bobby Portis is my X factor for Milwaukee as well, Flachie, because if you look at the last 9 games, he scored in double digits the last 8 of them. Dropped 30 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 steals on the Magic earlier last week. He had 24 points against the Knicks. He had 17, 10, and 2 blocks in their season finale against Orlando. So I know Bobby Portis has been there. He's done that before. He's been with Team USA before. He's played at, you know, all the highest levels of basketball. Same draft class as Miles Turner as well. Mm-hmm. Started out in Chicago, not afraid to punch his own teammate in the face.
Nope.
You know, somebody that has that dog in him. And I think he could be an X factor. But if I'm going to throw a secondary X factor out there, I thought about Brook Lopez just because I feel like if he's hitting from three, that can be deadly. But I think Patrick Beverley is someone you got to keep an eye on. Pat Bev can really muck things up. And we know how aggressive he can be. Is he going to be overly aggressive to the point where he tries hurting somebody again, like we've seen him do previously, where he tries to undercut somebody as they're running fast? It would not surprise me if he does that, just because Patrick Beverley is a dirty player. And, you know, we respect Patrick Beverley and the dog that he has in him, but I don't respect when he makes dirty plays on players, regardless of who it is, whether it's the team I'm cheering for or not. But I just think that that's something to really keep an eye on there. And that could be an X factor, because if he's somehow gets in the head of one of these young guys, does it really rattle them? Does he hurt somebody? Does that mess the Pacers up? You know, I just kind of wonder, like, they can't let Patrick Beverley be that, you know, that disruptor that gets in there and causes them to lose a game because he just acts a fool.
I think Pat Beverley is the guy that you never realize his value until it's already happened. We will know if Tyrese Haliburton is struggling. That means that Pat Beverley is playing very valuable minutes for that Milwaukee Bucks team. So, yeah, I think that for Turner, I want to say, and it sounds weird to say this, but he's got to be a top five player in this series. And I know that sounds on paper, well, completely reasonable, but if you have Haliburton and Siakam, which you imagine are probably playing better than Turner just because they're going to be a little bit more involved, and then you have Dame, and then you have, you know, Giannis, depending on how many games he plays, Turner's got to be the fifth player in that series. Yeah. You're going to have Chris Middleton that could very well be in that top five as well. And then that next spot either goes to a Miles Turner or a Brook Lopez or anything of the sort. Brook Lopez, look, he's a player that was, you know, just a couple years ago, runner-up for Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, he's still got it. He's been around for quite some time. So remember, he was in the same draft class as Roy Hibbert. So think about that. You know, Hibbert's been done for a while. Brook Lopez still going strong. He's transformed his whole game, becoming more of a three-point shooter, becoming a better defensive center. So still a good player, but yet Turner has to be better than Brook Lopez and Bobby Portis in this playoff series in order for Indiana to be able to advance.
Absolutely, Flashy. Well, let's move on to the next section. We only have a couple more left, people, so hold on tight with us. I know it's been a lengthy episode, but we're trying to get you as covered as we can for this postseason matchup. But we're talking injuries here, Flashy, and obviously we've been talking a lot about Giannis, so go ahead and give us the latest on Giannis and then what's going on with the Pacers.
I mean, look, we foreshadowed like no other. I mean, there was suspense, but everybody knew it. Look, the big key to this series, the big news that broke today, is that Giannis is not expected to be ready for the start of this series. Does that mean one game? Does it mean two games? It could mean anything. But what it does sound like is Giannis will miss some time. A calf injury is a very tricky thing. You guys got to remember, Kevin Durant had a calf injury before he blew out his Achilles in the NBA Finals. Nobody expected that to happen. Now, when you look back at history, you start to say, hey, you know what? I don't know. That sounds like it was directly correlated. I'm sure the Bucks need to play it safe. This is their star player. You don't want him to miss all of next year or anything of the sort, but we won't know how many games, but it definitely looks like Giannis expected to miss some time. For the Indiana Pacers, yes, Benedict Mathurin is, of course, out. There is nothing that's changed with that. But other than that, you have a healthy Bill. You know, you have a great bill of health for this team, and I think that Obi Toppin is a player that you know is a little bit banged up, but he played against Atlanta. You give him a week off, you know he's going to be out there. He was our Iron Man this year. Tyrese Haliburton, you're able to get that extra rest for. This Pacers team is going into this series healthy at the right time. And for me, that makes them dangerous, having the Bucks backpedaling at this moment.
Yeah, the Pacers having their team in full, you know, without Mathurin, fully healthy. They've played well without Mathurin. They figured things out. You know, losing Mathurin's big, but it's not even comparable to the Bucks losing Giannis. So, you know, it's one of those things where I do like how the Pacers are approaching this. Rick Carlisle has said multiple times today that they're approaching it like he is going to play in game one, and they have to be ready for everything. And I think you have to do that because at this point, it is Tuesday, right? So anything could happen between Tuesday and Sunday. Could Giannis magically get healed? You just never know. It's one of those things where teams have to report stuff, like they have to put their injury report out there. It is required by the league to do so. But if he is questionable, it wouldn't shock me if they say on Saturday, okay, Giannis is now questionable for game one. So the Pacers cannot pretend like, oh, Giannis is going to be out for game one until he is officially ruled out. They have to make sure that they have everything covered. And while it seems likely he will miss, it, you know, wouldn't shock me if it was more gamesmanship trying to make the Pacers think, well, Giannis won't play in this game. And then all of a sudden he does. And if he plays really well, you know, it could, you know, ruffle the feathers a little bit of the Pacers and just kind of rattle them a little bit and get them a little bit off kilter. So you just never want to buy into that stuff, especially with it being reported so early. But it is important to monitor because of how significant of a player Giannis is.
And one thing I want to touch on is that completely different injury. But Giannis had that hyperextended knee when the Bucks won the NBA Finals against the Suns. And I remember it looked like he was going to miss time, and he still powered through that, and he was incredible in that series. Giannis is tough. At this point, by the time of game one, he'll have had close to 2 weeks off of rest. That's got to be worth something for a really – for the guy that you call the Greek freak. I mean, he is a – you know, he's in some top – you know, tip-top shape. So – anything's possible for Giannis. I do think that there is a part that it could be mind games, but it's also something that the Bucks need to be careful with. So we won't know until tip off, basically, of, hey, they're not. I don't think they're going to rule him out on a Thursday or a Friday or anything like that. They're going to ride this out and see. So that's all we can do is just wait and see.
Absolutely, Fonch. Well, let's move on here to one of our last topics here, and is what are the experts saying about this series? So I've gone through, watched a few different YouTube clips to hear what people are saying about this. Obviously, did not get everybody's opinions, But Facci, how about you go ahead and read the first one, and I'll read the second. We'll just go back and forth, kind of sharing these quotes.
All right. Stephen A. Smith, a guy that is always good for an opinion.
You're missing two before that.
Okay. All right. So I was going to read the one that I had put together. Let's see. In terms of quotes of what people are saying, so here's what we got. I'm picking the Pacers to win the series. Even if Giannis is healthy, the Pacers' speed and pace is a problem. The Bucks are big, but they're slow. They don't have any lockdown defenders. I've got Indiana. That's Chris Broussard.
Now, Chris Broussard did live in Indiana at one point, so he mentioned that on that clip. And I'm just going to piggyback off that because Nick Wright is who he does the show with. And he said it's hard to fathom Giannis missing time and the Bucks winning. Giannis is putting up a 42-13-5 on 67.6% shooting, and they've only won once. This is not that same Pacers team that ran them out of the gym. I think the bracket broke good for the Bucks. If the Bucks are to face any team without Giannis, the Pacers are the easiest opponent. It's a big Damian Lillard moment, a la what Brunson did for Dallas when Luka was out last year. That was Nick Wright.
And you never know once it goes when you're a co-host. Sometimes someone always likes to play one side, plays the other, but at the same point, look, I think the Bucks got some trouble, but everybody is entitled to their own opinion, no doubt about it. The next quote comes from Stephen A. Smith, like I foreshadowed. And he said, you know, Damian Lillard is not happy in Milwaukee. If they lose to the Pacers in the first round, they need to blow it up. And he said that he's picking Indiana.
Did you have more from Stephen A. that you previously put? Go ahead and share that, too. I mean, I forgot to copy yours over with my notes, too. So
no worries. So he said, with or without Giannis, Indiana is winning this series against Milwaukee. He did then go on to talk about how, you know, Dame seems to be, you know, a little bit, you know, not, you know, the happiest, and they could make some changes. They could blow it up. But, hey, Stephen A. Smith picking the Pacers, you got to love that.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear Stephen A. pick the Pacers. I'm not going to lie. But we'll keep
that's it how going. I feel. I never heard so many people on our side. I kind of don't like it. Yeah, I mentioned that before, but, you know, you got to like when they talk about us.
It's a weird place to be. Now, this one, I think it's trickled around social media a little bit, but I'll go ahead and read the full quote. With a fully healthy Giannis, Indiana has a good chance to win that series. With a limited Giannis, I think it's likely they beat Milwaukee. People haven't watched a lot of Indiana since they got all that hype in the in-season tournament. Indiana is a good team. They're a very difficult team to defend. This is a team that is very dangerous. One of the things that the Bucks struggle with, because they play two bigger guys most of the time, they really struggle getting back and guarding this team in transition. The pace with Indiana is everything. It's a nightmare scenario for Milwaukee defensively. Significantly different at the point of attack defensively with not having Drew now. That's why I think Indiana is very dangerous. If Giannis is fully healthy and looks good game one, Indiana has a legitimate shot to win it. If he is limited in any way, I'll pick Indiana to win it. That was Tim Legler on ESPN.
Hey, love me some legs. And in specific, we're talking about Tim Legler. But, you know, great. Hey, awesome. I always respect his opinion in the league. Yeah, legs. It's a great nickname, you know. But always respect his opinion. But another quote that we had from Brian Windhorst said, Giannis averaged 42 points against the Pacers this year, but that was before Pascal Siakam. The Bucks have not defended well all year. Even with Doc Rivers, they haven't improved that much, and their offense has fallen off tremendously.
Yeah, he was noncommittal in this segment. It was just kind of piggybacking off that, saying Giannis, you know, was unbelievable, but they didn't have Pascal, so it was giving them the benefit of the doubt. So now we're going to shake it up here with everybody's favorite former big man in the league. Played for Doc Rivers as well. We'll get to that in a second. But everybody keeps anointing the Pacers like they're the Denver Nuggets. They're the sixth seed in the East. When I look at the Milwaukee Bucks, they have Damian Lillard, who could be the best player in that series. They have money-making Middleton and some key pieces. When I look at the Bucks, I have them winning the series, even if Giannis can't play. Kendrick Perkins.
Money-making Middleton doesn't sound like the best description for it. It sounds like a guy who's overpaid at this point. So, interesting stuff. Kendrick Perkins, whether you hate him or love him.
Money-making, shot-making Middleton.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. However you want to look at it. But next quote we have, this is from a name that will be pretty interesting. We'll hear after, but I'll give the quote first. They absolutely need Giannis to win. They struggled beating the Pacers with Giannis. I'm not saying the Bucks can't steal a win without Giannis, but if you're asking me, can the Milwaukee Bucks beat the Indiana Pacers 4 out of 7 games without Giannis? Absolutely not. They struggled with their identity all season long. The Pacers might not be a championship-level team, but they are a playoff team that can beat the Bucks, especially without Giannis. They need Giannis, and that's Austin Rivers, Doc Rivers' son.
Yeah, I was kind of interested to see that because we've seen Austin defend his dad quite a bit this year on different platforms, but the fact that he was pretty much just calling it like it is, hey, you know what, Dad? Sorry, I'm just going to be honest, and I appreciate that. I respect that actually a lot more coming from Austin Rivers, someone that probably has more intel on what's going on with Milwaukee than a lot of other people probably do. I mean, there's other guys that probably do, but, you know, in this segment here on NBA Today, Adrian Wojnarowski actually jumped in and actually shared some basketball thoughts, and he said, this is a bad matchup for the Bucks. That's the problem with the Pacers. They play fast, especially for Dame in a playoff series. Playing slow and in the half court is what he wants to do, to play as fast as the Pacers have played all season. It has been a major matchup problem for the Bucks. It's going to be a major issue for them if Giannis can't play.
Yeah, look, you got to respect Woj, obviously, as connected as it gets. But I think these have been some good quotes. And for the last one, here's a basketball mind that I think you just got to respect, whether you like him as a player or you just got to respect his takes, I think. Draymond Green said, uncertain on the status of Giannis. We've seen Giannis come back like He-Man. I expect him to come back, although Cavs can be tricky. How much will the Bucks ownership hold Giannis back if he isn't fully healthy? This team has not been that good all year compared to the standard they expected to be. They've struggled with the Pacers all season long. This is a different game than the regular season. The Pacers haven't played much defense all year. You have to defend in the playoffs, and the Pacers have made a living outscoring teams. Defending in the half court will be problematic for the Pacers as they've tried to make it a track meet all season long. The X factor for the Pacers is Pascal Siakam. I have the Bucks winning this series with or without Giannis. If the Pacers want to win this series, Pascal Siakam will have to be the number one option. Pat Bev is going to make things hard for Tyrese, but I don't think he will score it at the level that he needs to be the number one, which is why the Pacers will have to be the guy, which is why Pascal will have to be the guy if they want to win.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting quote from Draymond. The fact that he said that he thinks the Bucks will win with or without Giannis. It was Draymond Green and Kendrick Perkins were the only two people to say that. With or without Giannis, they'll be the Pacers in a 7-game series. I don't think I agree with that.
I don't. I mean, as it comes to Kendrick Perkins, I'm always like, come on. He's the kind of guy that I'm like, I don't think he watches the Pacers or like roots for anyone in specific on them. Draymond, I know that he knows basketball. I think that he probably just looks at the Bucks as being more of a championship level team. But to say beat them with or without Giannis, to me, feels like a bit of a far-fetched comment for you know, when you're talking about a team that beat them 4 out of 5 times with Giannis. I'm sorry, but we've talked about how are you going to make up for 42 points per game? Nobody on the Bucks is going to attempt 32 free throws in a game other than Giannis. So I don't know how they're going to make up that production.
Yeah, and I will just say this. I mean, with Draymond Green, some of the comments that he made, I don't necessarily agree with because he talks about how they just run and run and run and run. Well, yes, that's been part of their MO, but that's not just who they are. They've gotten so much better defensively. I mean, we've talked about that with a lot of different people that kind of just have that, you know, they have that image of the Pacers just being fast and not doing anything else in their head. It's not the case. And for him to say that Tyrese Haliburton's going to have to be the number two guy and Pascal's going to be the number one offensively. Well, if you look over the last 20 plus games since the All-Star break, Pascal Siakam was outscoring Tyrese Haliburton on an average basis by like 3 points. So it's already kind of shifted that way anyway. So I think Draymond, and this guy's playing basketball every single night. They're fighting for their lives, trying to make it to the play-in. Like, he's not paying close attention to the statistics and up close on what the Pacers are doing every night. He played against the Pacers. He saw how fast they played, and I'm sure he probably felt the same way. But this is a totally different team than who Draymond saw in Indianapolis. This is a totally different team than who they were at the in-season tournament. And I think that Tyrese Haliburton, I think that Pat Beverly thing, like that's one reason why I brought it up is just because I think it's going to be interesting. And, you know, he did say that, and I didn't put every part of that quote in there too because it was just really lengthy. But Draymond did talk about how he thinks that, you know, Tyrese will be able to handle Pat Bev defensively. Like, he's not going to bother him that much. Like, he'll have an impact, but not to the point where he just takes him out of the game or the series. And he thinks that Tyrese is a very mature point guard that can handle it. But he just thinks that if he's the number one option versus Pascal, it's going to be problematic. And I don't think that that's going to be the case necessarily.
I just don't think that the Pacers are relying on Haliburton to score 30 points per game. You and I have talked about if he could be 20 points per game, 22, Pacers should be just fine. Yeah. And I think that that is, you know, even with Pat Beverly, you know, disrupting him, I still do think that, you know, Haliburton can get to that, you know, 22 points per game mark. So I do think that, yeah, you want Pascal Siakam to be the guy that's leading the Pacers in scoring. So that's what you hope for. That's what you want. That should be the game plan.
Yeah, for sure, Pachi. So let's kind of close things out here with our final thoughts. What are you thinking? Final thoughts for this series?
The fact that Giannis is expected to miss time. I honestly, I felt that if Giannis played every game, I thought this could be definitely a 6-7 game series. Yeah, I mean, look, I would say, all right, Milwaukee, you would imagine they would be the favorite. If Giannis is to miss even one game, that changes my whole opinion on this series. And I'm going to Indiana. I think that if Giannis misses game one and the Pacers steal it and they have an opportunity to, you know, even go to Indiana being 1-1, I think that that in my opinion, favors the Indiana Pacers. I think that the Bucks already struggled against us. We are not the matchup that fits their style of play. And I do think that you're getting a rested, healthy, fired up, and hungry Pacers team. I think the Pacers win this series. I think they won it in 6 games. And to me, I didn't think I'd be saying that at any point, but I'm saying it right now.
Yeah, I don't like when I agree with you because it just feels weird to do that. But I'm feeling Pacers in 6 myself. And, you know, I thought early on, I think the Bucks probably win this in 7, especially if Giannis only misses one game. I can see that happening still. But I do think that if Indiana can get one game, it's going to change everything. The confidence will come back. And this is a Bucks team that got swept last year in the first round. If Damian Lillard is truly unhappy in Milwaukee, if Giannis is not fully healthy, can the Pacers take advantage of it? And I think they can. I think they've gotten better enough defensively. And I think Doc Rivers will get out coached by Rick Carlisle. I think there's a lot of different factors here that favor the Pacers. You know, the one matchup that I do think is really interesting too is the point guard matchup, the one-on-one matchup between Dame and Tyrese. Like, who's going to be the better point guard on the floor? But I think if Giannis is at least out for if he's out for more than one game, this could be a 5-game series if the Bucks aren't careful, you know, because I just can't see Milwaukee talent-wise enough doing that. And the Pacers have to hit their outside shots. And that is one thing that they were able to do against Milwaukee and still win was not hit their outside shots because they shot 30% against the Bucks in this 5-game series. And so I'm just kind of curious how everything's going to play out. I'm trying not to be a homer, and I really don't feel like I am. I think that if Giannis is healthy, I would pick the Bucks in this series, probably in 6. If Giannis is healthy from day one, but because of the calf strain and because of just the way this Bucks team has kind of played under 500 basketball the last 36 games of the season, they're not in a great spot. They do have a lot of people counting them out already. So I think that's the one negative thing that I have in terms of picking the Pacers is just so many people are picking Indiana to win. But, you know, I think when push comes to shove, you'll probably see more of the ESPN predictions say Bucks in 7, that kind of thing. Just because I think they're going to give Giannis a time to come back and take care of the Pacers. But, you know, I think this is going to be a fun series. I think a lot of it's going to be predicated on how can the Pacers bench outplay Milwaukee's bench and just dominate once again. But how deep does Rick go into his bench rotation as well? Does he make a little bit shorter and just trust the guys that he can? And what do they do there? So a lot of different things to play here, but I'm picking Pacers in 6.
Hey, I love it. I want to hear the predictions of everybody that's listening to this. You know, send them out after this, when this episode's tweeted out, let us know your thoughts, your predictions, what you see it in. It's just crazy that we've gotten to a time where the fun thing to do is to pick the Pacers to beat the Bucks. You didn't think we'd see this to this day, but, you know, just so soon. But this is also when we're right on the cusp of being able to gain that national respect. I can tell you right now, if the Pacers can beat the Bucks and get out of the first round, we're going to get more nationally televised games next year. There's going to be more eyes on the Pacers. There's going to be 100 reasons why Pascal Siakam should want to re-sign with Indiana and be able to build on this. You're going to want to see the front office say, we're closer than we thought. Let's keep going. There's so much that's on the line for this Pacers team in this series. I can't wait for playoff basketball. I'm so glad that we're back in it.
We are almost there, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back with one more episode tomorrow. Fachi will not be here for that one because he's going to be enjoying this pre-playoff celebration in Mexico. Yep. But I will have a guest on and maybe try to get more of a national perspective and not just a Pacers-centric perspective. But I think you guys are going to enjoy that conversation. But Fachi, go ahead and tell everybody where they can find us at on social media.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter at PacersPod, STP. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at underscore FACCI. You can find us on Instagram at PacersPod, STP. You can find us on Facebook at Setting the Pace. You can find us on TikTok at Setting the Pace. And Alex, tell them where they can check us out on YouTube.
Ladies and gentlemen, go to youtube.com/settingthepace, a Pacers podcast, where you can find all of our video content. Please subscribe to the channel. Let us know what you guys think in the comment section below, especially on this podcast and the Mailbag podcast. Go back, watch those, answer those questions in the comments, because we want to hear from you guys as well with these questions. And I put the questions in the description too, so if you're unfamiliar or unsure what they actually were asked, you can go there and find it and respond to that. But don't forget, find all of our merchandise in the link in the description below on YouTube or on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast, because there's going to be a link there for you guys to click. And we have playoff shirts on the way, ladies and gentlemen, so make sure you go check those out. I would assume at this point, when you're listening to this on Thursday, they will be up. So if you want a Smear the Deer or Beat the Bucks playoff shirt that we have created, check that out. Buy it. Support Setting the Pace. It would mean a lot to us. But Bocce, if you're excited for a trip to Mexico before the Pacers get their first win on Sunday in the postseason with Tyrese Haliburton, then hit me with those three words.
Let's go, Pacers!